Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
From 90.9 WBUR, I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. Coming up, Boston's number one in football, baseball, and according to a new study that completes the hat trick, traffic congestion. It's a distinction that everybody loves to hate.
50% of our drivers don't drive every day, but we do have traffic. There's no question about it, and we're working on it every single day.
Why Boston's traffic is the most congested in the country and what, if anything, can be done about it. And speaking of traffic, we'll get an update on how today's snowfall is affecting the ride home.
It does pose a little bit of a challenge both today, late this afternoon, with the afternoon commute as well as the morning commute on Wednesday.
Also today, why your federal tax refund is smaller this year and why you shouldn't be surprised.
We've known about this from the second that the Republican tax cuts passed.
That's all coming up next on Radio Boston.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. This won't come as any surprise to millions of Boston area commuters. Traffic here is really bad. How bad? The worst. We may be number one in sports victories, but this is a distinction nobody wants. According to a new report from the transportation data firm INRIX, which rates traffic congestion around the world, during morning and evening rush hours, Boston had the worst traffic in 2018 than any other major metropolitan area in the country. So why is this, and what can be done? In a moment, we'll hear from two transportation experts and take your calls. But first, let's hear from Stephanie Pollack, the State Secretary of Transportation, who I spoke with just a few minutes ago. I began by asking her about the report, which looks at how much time people spend commuting when roads are congested at peak periods. Here's her response.
I think people who commute in the Boston area did not need a study to tell them that we have a congestion problem. Certainly, Governor Baker is well aware of this, and last fall had asked MassDOT to put together a comprehensive study to look at when congestion is happening, where it's congested and it's happening, why it's happening, and what we can do about it. So we're already kind of halfway through that process.
Right. So this hardly comes as news. I'm curious, though, about the methodology of this report and what you think about it, because it seems to look at sort of how slow people go as opposed to how long they actually spend in a car. So, yes, Boston, the congestion means people go slowly, but does it necessarily mean it's the worst commute that you could possibly have? Or how do you balance that?
So for the congestion study that we're doing, we've been asking ourselves, what is it about commuting and congestion that people care about? And I don't think it is speed. I think that no one really expects to go 65 miles an hour on the highway at the peak of rush hour, which is sort of the assumption of the INRIX study, because it compares congestion to that speed limit. And again, that's not to poo-poo congestion. It is important and demands attention. I think that people care about two things. I do think they care about time, and I do think that the INRIX study methodology is generally considered to be one that favors big sprawly places where total commute time is long because you don't live near anything, but you might move along a little faster. Boston is a compact place where there's always going to be more traffic slowness because we're all close to everything. So we're looking at time. We're trying to answer the question in our congestion study. People's perception is it now takes more time. I used to go from point A to point B in 20 minutes. Now it takes me 30. That's a valid concern that people have that we're looking at.
Right.
The other thing we know people care a lot about is consistency and reliability. Some days I get where I'm going in half an hour, then 2 days later it's suddenly an hour and a half. And if you're trying to pick up your kids at daycare, go to the gym or meet friends or whatever you want to do before or after work, that's a real problem. And that's something that MassDOT and the state can focus on. What's really happening to us in Greater Boston is as we become more congested, when anything goes wrong, a crash, a police action, bad weather, work zones that we're setting up so that we can fix the roads, which in turn are in bad shape and make congestion worse. All of those things kind of destabilize the system. So we are interested in the question of why is the system so full, but I'm really interested in the question of what can we as an agency do to deal with this, what's usually referred to as non-recurring congestion, so that at least people have reliable commute times.
Right. So Governor Baker and you, Secretary Pollack, have put a lot of focus on fixing the MBTA, upgrading cars, tracks, switches, but this is a long-term project, right? Is that going to bring relief to commuters in the shorter term, I guess?
Transit and other real options for people absolutely are part of the solution to congestion, both in the short term as well as in the longer term. Given how bad congestion is, I have a hard time believing that anyone who's sitting in a car in congestion has a better way to get where they're going. Because if they did, they'd at least give it a try. So I'm assuming that one of the reasons that people put up with the level of congestion that they're facing is they can't figure out another way to get where they're going. And so I do think some of the work we're doing on making the T better can produce real choices for people this year and next year, not just 5 or 10 years down the road. And we have to. If people don't have a choice, they can't avoid congestion. And, you know, we can't wave a magic wand and make congestion go away. We have congestion, as the INRIX report acknowledges, because the economy is great and it's a really vital area. You know, we added 180,000 people to the labor force in Massachusetts between December of 2017 and December of 2018. If you ask me why congestion is worse, I'd say it's 180,000 more people working.
Yeah, that makes sense. One more question about the MBTA, Secretary, before I let you go. The MBTA is proposing to raise fares by 6.3%. Given this challenge that we're talking about, won't that in effect put more people on the roads if it becomes more expensive to ride the MBTA?
In order to improve the quality of the MBTA and make the investments that will give people real choices, the T needs to modestly increase fares every few years at regular intervals so that we can keep up with inflation, pay our workforce, and invest in things like this year we're adding 50 more bus drivers so that the buses work better. We think that modest increases is the right way to make sure the T has the resources. And we don't expect to lose a lot of riders. You know, every year, taxpayers across Massachusetts give the T 2 or 3% more. The cities and towns that the T assesses give the T 2 or 3% more. And that's why we think that it's reasonable to ask the people who use the service every day to give that same relatively small amount so that the proportion of the T's costs that are covered by taxpayers in cities and towns and the people who use the system stay roughly the same.
Got it. Quick update for drivers today. It's snowing out there. What are you seeing on the roads out there? What's your advice to commuters?
So at this point, it is snowing pretty much across the state. It started in Western Mass earlier, and it's clearly reached Boston. And, you know, there will be times that the snow is supposed to be coming down pretty hard, maybe as much as an inch an hour. So we're asking people to be really careful, and particularly a couple hours from now, it's projected to sort of turn over and warm up, and there'll be sleet mixed in and freezing rain mixed in. And people just need to be really, really careful, give themselves extra time to get where they're going. And if they don't need to be out this evening, it would be a good evening to stay in.
Sounds like good advice from State Secretary of Transportation Stephanie Pollack. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're very grateful.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you, Anthony.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll hear from two transportation experts and take your calls about what can be done. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.
Wait a second.
Don't hit the skip button.
I mean, we know you do it.
We just wanted to take a second here because you already know how to download a podcast.
But you might have a question about some of the other technology you use, and we think we can help.
WBUR is working on a new show, and we're here to answer your tech questions, whether it's hardware-related,
software-related, social, even ethical.
Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and give us a call. Leave a message, 617-917-4717.
Give it a try, 617-917-4717.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Before the break, we were talking about a new report from the transportation data firm INRIX, which rates traffic congestion around the world. It found that during morning and evening rush hours, Boston had the worst traffic in 2018, worse than any other major metropolitan area in the country, even worse than Los Angeles. Imagine that. Now, this is hardly surprising to many of you, particularly if you're sitting right now in traffic. But listeners, we want to ask, why is this? What can be done? Tell us about your commute. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. And we're joined now by Chris Dempsey. He's director of the advocacy group called Transportation for Massachusetts. He's also the former assistant secretary of the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. Chris Dempsey, welcome. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Anthony.
And also with us is Jesse Mermel, president of the Alliance for Business Leadership. Jesse, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Now, let me get quick reactions from both of you. Jesse, I'll start with you. Your reaction to this latest report.
Oh, knock me over with a feather. I mean,
really shocked you.
Really shocked. I was so glad I was seated when I read the report. No, listen, as a human being who exists in Greater Boston and takes various modes of transportation, I certainly wasn't shocked. But the reaction from our members, who are business leaders from companies of all sizes and all industries across Greater Boston, was that this is a major problem for the economy and for their businesses. And I was getting a text from a CEO of a 125 person company earlier today who said this is exactly why they've had to implement flex scheduling.
Wow.
Not because it's what she wants to do, not because it's necessarily what's good for her clients, but because if she wants her folks to be productive and actually get their work done, it's just a necessity.
All right. So this is going to lead right into what we need to do and why it's so important. Jesse, forgive me, I mispronounced your last name, Mermel.
You're not the first one to
do it.
It's quite all right.
I apologize for that. I wanted to clear that up right at the beginning.
I've
got a producer in the studio who's very much on the ball and corrected that. Chris, let me get a quick reaction from you on this report, too.
Anthony, I think this report puts things in context, and it does it in two ways. The first is it shows that at a national level, we are really falling behind, and we are not doing enough compared to our competitor regions. The second thing it does is it really puts numbers on what people already feel emotionally in terms of traffic congestion. 164 hours every year that people are stuck in place. That equates to over $2,200 for every driver. So you're already paying for congestion with your pocketbook in addition to the emotional toll it's taking on you.
So it's a real problem. I want to just ask you about, and I talked about this earlier with Secretary Pollack, and that is the methodology of this particular report, because Secretary Pollack sort of took issue with it. I mean, she didn't dispute the importance of it, but Jesse, like you said, she said, I don't think this really came as any surprise. But this idea that it measures how slow we go at these peak hours, as opposed to total time commuting. Isn't that an important distinction? Let me start with you, Jesse.
Yeah, I have to say, when I've been talking to my members today about this, they haven't brought up the methodology at all. What they've brought up is the business equivalent of what Chris just talked about, the real world implication. You know, they're talking to me about the hourly employees who aren't showing up on time and who make it tough to open a business at the start of the day. You know, they're talking about what I mentioned earlier, having to switch to flex time, or quite frankly, customers who aren't able to get to their stores and their businesses to patronize them. The methodology just isn't coming up because I think this experience is so universal, whether you're a resident or a business owner. And I don't know a single person who's worried about getting into the weeds in the footnotes of the report. They just want this fixed.
They just want it fixed. So, Chris, big question. I mean, where do we start? We heard from Secretary Pollack. This is something that Governor Baker has certainly taken on. He's put a lot of effort at fixing the T, upgrading the T, new cars, investing in state of repair, new tracks and switches. Is that the right place to be starting this?
Well, let me offer a little bit of praise and then a little bit of a push.
Yeah.
The governor has been focused on this question. He created the Commission on the Future of Transportation, which released its report in December, and which had a lot of really good recommendations, primarily investing in the MBTA, taking a better look at road management, and moving people, not vehicles. All of those are the right direction. But now we need MassDOT to be much more proactive in implementing those recommendations. We need less quibbling with the methodology and less saying, let's look at this question and let's study it, and more saying, we're going to start to tackle this by doing pilots, by testing things out, and by really bringing real change to the Commonwealth. And change can be painful, but the status quo is even more painful.
listeners, we're talking about a subject that too many people, too many of you are well aware of, the painfully slow commutes around the Boston area. And in light of a new study that basically found that this city is the most congested in the country at peak hours, when you're trying to get from point A to point B, from work to home, from home to work. What do you think? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're looking for, we want to hear your stories about your commute, and then we want to talk about solutions. Let's go to Jay, who's calling from Chelsea. Jay, good to have you on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks so much for having me. So I'm a maintenance guy in the city. I drive daily from East Boston to Brighton, from Somerville to Dorchester. There's a couple of things that I've seen that have really frustrated me, and I am one of those people that will call the DOT on a daily basis to yell at them about them. But street lights, I've sat at lights for 5-8 minutes with nobody on any of the other roads coming at me. I have dealt with Storo Drive and that massacre for the last year and a half. You know, they're closing down lanes in the middle of the day at 3 o'clock to cut down a branch on a tree or something. And then the Longfellow being closed also pushed a lot of congestion over, which has just basically made my job go from I can hit 2 to 3 buildings a day, whereas before I used to be able to hit 6 or so.
Well, Jay, it sounds like a story that a lot of people are dealing with. I appreciate the call. Chris, let me start with you. You put a couple of ideas on the table there. Beginning with these lights, I think we've all experienced that frustration where there's a line of traffic behind you, there's nobody coming across the cross street, and yet you sit there for 2 minutes waiting for the lights. Can something be done about that?
Well, so technology is definitely a challenge here, Anthony, but I think there are some bigger underlying challenges. Just this week, MassDOT released data that shows that traffic through the Sumner Tunnel is up 40% in the last 6 years. That's not something you solve with technology. That's something you solve by better managing demand. And it sounds like Jay is probably one of those drivers who's driving across the harbor every day. You heard the economic cost that that congestion has. He used to be able to make more jobs and do more trips. Now he has to do fewer. That means higher costs for him and higher costs for his customers. It gets to the things that Jesse's been talking about, and it explains why congestion is just so costly for all of us.
Yeah. Jesse, speaking of that, the report, in terms of lost productivity, $4.1 billion, according to this report.
Yeah, not chump change, right? That's real money.
Sooner or later, that's going to add up to real money.
If you look at sooner or later, right? I don't know about you, $4.1 billion is real money in my book. If you look at a report that the Boston Foundation came out with 5 or 6 years ago now called The Cost of Doing Nothing about Transportation, they actually estimated that by 2030, we're looking at $26 billion. And that's doing nothing. That's not, not expanding. That's talking about just not properly maintaining what we've already got.
So I want to play a little tape from Governor Baker. This came from this past November. It was during the debate with his then opponent, Democrat Jay Gonzalez. And at that debate, we posed the question to Governor Baker about how he planned to alleviate traffic concerns. And we tried to press him a little bit about talk about something that you can do in the short term, because sort of fixing the T is a sort of longer 15-year project. But what about the short term? Here's what he said.
The stuff that people really care about, the extension and expansion of the Orange Line and the Red Line, and the investment in the Green Line, that stuff's coming in the next 12 to 24 months. In addition to that, the signal projects, the system projects, the electric power systems, that's all coming in the next 24 months, too.
So, Chris, 24 months is about a year and a half from now. Is that quick enough? And is that going to make an appreciable difference, what he's talking about there?
I think those are good steps. And as a daily T rider, I'm excited to see upgrades in rail cars. But it's not enough. It's necessary, but not sufficient. We need to see more piloting from MassDOT, things like smarter tolling, which they've been really reluctant to do. But every other large city in the United States, all of the other top 10, do some version of time of day tolling on their roads. Greater Boston is the only one that does not. And I don't think it's a surprise that we're now the highest rated congestion in the entire country.
So how would that work? Time of day tolling? Is that like that essentially would work like a congestion tax?
So,
right?
Look, just like a diner gives you an early bird special and a theater gives you matinee pricing, this is a recognition that we have a limited amount of road and we need to manage that road more efficiently. So let's give drivers a price incentive or a price signal to shift their trip to different times of day.
Jesse, sound like a good idea. And what effect might that have on businesses, for example?
Well, I think it depends on the business, right? If you're a business that depends on freight or trucking or getting things to A and B, that might have a different impact than if you have a building full of office workers who might be able to work remotely for the first few hours of the day and then come in. But what's interesting to me is that both you and Chris have framed this in terms of our competitiveness with other major areas. And I think it's important to note that other major metropolitan areas like Seattle and just in the past few months, our neighbors to the south in Washington, D.C. have proposed massive multi-billion dollar transportation packages with money that would be raised from a host of different sources over the course of decades to make huge systemic investments in transportation. And as we talk about, you know, these smaller but important short-term steps, I think we need to realize that our competitors are eclipsing us by miles and miles in the investments that they're making and the huge changes that they're going to see both in their quality of life and transportation, but also in their economic competitiveness. And I'm really nervous that we're going to get lapped here.
That's interesting. I want to come back and ask you about sort of what those big investments in your sort of dream would look like. I mean, what would we invest in? But I want to go back to the phones for at least a couple more calls. Let's go to Coco, who's calling from Essex. Coco, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I can't believe how appropriate the timing is of this subject as I'm driving from Boston to Essex, and it's going to take me over 2.5 hours to go about 30 miles.
Now, Coco, let me ask you about that. Is that because of the weather, or is that a daily thing for you?
It's because of the weather, but it's not always just the weather. I mean, there can be mornings where it could take me 45 minutes or up to 3 hours, depending on whatever traffic jam happens to happen that day. And I think earlier you said that the issue in the study was with the timing and being able to schedule. It's one thing if you always know it's going to be 3 hours, but not being able to know is almost worse than the unknown is almost worse.
Right.
But I think the real problem with making the traffic is there's no manners or there's no enforcing of manners. I mean, people are jaywalking. People block the box. In New York City, if you block the box, you're going to get a ticket. If you jaywalk in L.A., you're going to get a ticket. Here in Boston, it just, there's a blind eye to it. I mean, I see people doing U-turns to get into the tunnel, Callahan Tunnel, and right in the road, right in front of policemen, and there's nobody stopping them. So it's just kind of this pandemonium chaos of driving in the streets. But
Coco, I'm grateful for putting that on the table, and keep your eye on the road, and good luck with your commute back to Essex. I want to try to get another couple of calls, and let's go to Rodney, who's calling from North Andover. Rodney, go ahead. You're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, thank you for having me. One thing I haven't heard anyone touch upon is just, you know, I think we need to go back to the basics, especially for our young drivers, and teach them the common laws of the road. For example, you know, don't drive in the fast lane if you're not passing. When we're in traffic, leave gaps. Because when you don't leave a gap, when you fill in those gaps, you think you're being more efficient. You're really not. You're only causing a domino effect. If everyone throughout the lanes, across three lanes, drove the same consistent speed the whole entire way there, you would get to your destination way faster instead of hitting your brakes every second, trying to follow and tail the person behind you. And I think that's super important for people to know that. And also allowing people to merge. Stop being so aggressive. You know, everyone's trying to get somewhere. If you allow people to merge and get to where they have to go, the flow of traffic will become a little more smooth. So that's just what I think.
And Rodney, I appreciate
from just the way I drive.
Yeah, Rodney, I appreciate your call. So Chris and Jesse, we heard from Coco and Rodney, who are sort of suggesting similar things. I mean, just know the laws, but also the laws should be enforced. Any comments from either one of you?
Yeah, so go ahead, Anthony, Chris. I think both calls were very similar. In the first point that they're expressing frustration, and that frustration is very real. You can hear it in their voice as they're talking about their commutes. So this is a serious problem. But the second thing that they both touched on is that this is a function of human behavior. Mm. And you asked me a question earlier about technology and making the lights work better that I kind of deflected a little bit because fundamentally I do think this is a human behavior problem. Congestion exists, traffic exists because human beings are making decisions to drive on certain roads at certain times of day. Mm. And because it's a factor of human decisions, that means that better public policy can get us better outcomes. We think of traffic as if it's a fact of life of living in New England, like the weather. We can't control the weather, but we can control traffic if we have better policies.
Can we? So let me ask this really basic question, which is going to sound like a little bit of a pushback, but can we really control it? I mean, I was listening to Stephanie Pollack, who's reminding us of the population increase of this area, the number of jobs that are coming online. People want to be essentially working in a city that's the basic blueprint of which comes from the 17th century. I mean, isn't that sort of a kind of impossible combination of events, a collision of events?
The very clear evidence is that no, it's not impossible to change that. So we've seen that in Minneapolis. We've seen it in Seattle. Hmm. In Seattle, they've added 90,000 jobs in their downtown core, and they have fewer people driving downtown today than they did before they added those 90,000 jobs. In fact, Kendall Square in Cambridge is another example where we've added jobs over the last 15 years, and the number of people driving to Kendall Square has decreased. And that's because we've made investments in transit, and we've prioritized people that are taking buses, that are walking, that are cycling, instead of prioritizing individuals who are driving cars. Not to ban them or forbid them from coming, but to say, we want you to come in the most efficient way possible. Yeah. So we have proof here that this works, and we need to expand it regionally.
Jesse, you were talking. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's incredibly interesting. Yesterday, I was meeting with some of the senior team of a major company that'll be opening here in 2019. And they were talking about how they are wrestling with their own internal parking policy. Are they going to make it free for people to park? They can afford to do that. They have the space. But they want to encourage people and use their internal policy to push people to public transportation because they believe it's just better for the region. It makes more sense, whether you're thinking about congestion or the environmental impact, which we haven't really touched on here today. And so it is something that they can control, and they know that. And there's no question that the increased number of folks working in Greater Boston is a wonderful thing and absolutely something that we have to create policy around. But I think it's really a false narrative to say that that is the only factor here, especially when you consider that we have not maintained a state of good repair on what already exists. And so even if we hadn't added a single rider, a single person out there on the roads, we would be dealing with deteriorating infrastructure that would be doing a worse job for the public.
Let's go to Carol, who's calling from Cambridge. Carol, go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. One of the problems in Cambridge was that the density plan was completely ignored, and builders were allowed to overbuild condominiums and pretty much overpopulate the city so that nobody can move. Also, the universities keep on making new building projects, blocking up the roads for these new construction projects. And thirdly, the reason why the T can't pay for itself is because they're paying the big dig loan. If they didn't have that, maybe they'd have money to fix up the place.
Yeah, and Carol, that's a sort of structural issue that's been talked about for a lot of years. But Chris, let me come back to Carol's point about overdevelopment. I mean, is that something that needs to be considered?
So I think I agree with Carol on the point about the big dig debt, but yeah, she and I would disagree on this question around density. You know, you would think that if we spread everything out sort of smoothly across the state or across the region, that that's going to help with congestion. But actually what it does is it separates people from jobs. And that means they have to drive more to get from where they live to where they work. And so if we can build actually denser, especially around transit stations, and Cambridge has actually pretty good transit access, if we can do that, then we can actually make the entire region function much more efficiently economically.
Mm. So yeah, an example of that might be close to the neighborhood that I live in, Union Square, for example, is about to extend the Green Line. They're going to do a lot of development there. So is that the kind of dense development that you would see as easing this problem, even if it's going to be painful for several months to get there?
I think that's right. And these are challenging conversations because it does mean more change in some neighborhoods. But it's
and more congestion. I mean, they're talking about shutting down Washington Street, for example, in my neighborhood for 6 months while they fix that rail bridge.
Sure. Short term, for sure, there is pain to be felt. But I think Carol actually makes a really good point about the connection between housing and transportation. Those two things are very much married. And certainly when I think of it from the perspective of the business community, you know, where people live and having to, given our affordability crisis, having to move further and further away, as Chris pointed out, actually spreads out the traffic, makes the traffic time time and the drive time longer and creates more congestion. So these are hard conversations. People are very worried about the characters of their neighborhoods and school congestion and the whole nine yards. But I think we have to really consider whether or not we are looking at this as a commonwealth, at the risk of being very cheesy, where our fates are genuinely intertwined, and that possibly will come with some sacrifice. But transportation and housing are really leading in that conversation.
Jesse, I wanted to come back to a point you made earlier about sort of losing ground against our competitor cities and this need to really think big and make some big investments. What would those look like in your mind?
Well, goodness. You know, this is very much a multimodal and systemic problem. And so the solutions have to be multimodal and systemic. There is no one project or investment that will fix things. But if I think about things like investing in bus rapid transit, that places like Mexico City and many cities in China and now San Francisco and Albuquerque are making really meaningful investments in, where you can get something like 17 or 18 miles of bus rapid transit for every mile you would have spent on light rail or subway. I think about things like East-West Rail or South Coast Rail, but also improved bike and pedestrian infrastructure and crossings, in addition to shoring up our bridges and making sure our roads are in a state of good repair. And Chris has done a lot of great thinking about things like congestion pricing or transportation climate initiative that could incentivize people to use their roads differently. It is no one thing. Trust me, I think we all wish we could say, if we do this one project, it'll all get fixed. That's not the world we live in.
Right. Also, the world we live in, Chris, it's ruled by the clock, which bears down on us. But final thought from you in the final sort of 10 or 15 seconds here.
I agree with Jesse. This is about policies, not projects. This is a function of human behavior and the choices that 6 million Massachusetts residents, plus some in New Hampshire and Rhode Island, make every day. We need to start changing those choices by giving better options.
Chris Dempsey, director at an advocacy group called Transportation for Massachusetts. He's also the former assistant secretary of the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. Thanks so much for coming in, Chris.
Thank you.
Also with us, Jesse Mermel, president of the Alliance for Business Leaderships. Thanks, Jesse. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And callers, thank you for your calls. You can continue this conversation at radioboston.org or on Twitter at Radio Boston. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.
Wait a second.
Don't hit the skip button.
I mean, we know you do it.
We just wanted to take a second here because you already know how to download a podcast.
But you might have a question about some of the other technology you use, and we think we can help.
WBUR is working on a new show, and we're here to answer your tech questions, whether it's hardware-related,
software-related, social, even ethical.
Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and give us a call. Leave a message, 617-917-4717.
Give it a try, 617-917-4717.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. We've been talking a lot this hour about traffic and how it's congested in Boston. So let's switch to the weather and what's sure to clog up the evening commute even more. A winter storm that's moved into the area, bringing snow, sleet, and eventually rain is upon us. The MBTA says it will provide regular service, and while it may be slow, the commuter rail should be in working order as well. Logan Airport has canceled over 230 flights. A number of schools around the state's closed earlier today. Boston Mayor Marty Wall says depending upon what this storm does, schools could be closed tomorrow.
I'm being told that, you know, this time tomorrow we won't see much snow on the ground. But again, it depends on the winds, the snow lingering, all of those different questions that the meteorologists will be following them and tracking them and seeing what they say before we make any decisions on that.
Well, joining us now is Bill Babcock, meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Norton, Massachusetts. And Bill, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Anthony.
So give us a sense about this storm. Where is it moving and what's it doing right now? And where do you see it going?
Well, right now the storm is actually in two parts. One's out in the Great Lakes heading up into Canada, but the part we're watching is actually developing along the coast, and that's going to be moving up the coast and over southern New England during the overnight hours and then moving off to the north tomorrow morning. That has spread snow into our area. Amounts up to 2 inches have been reported so far. And also some milder air has been moving up, and that has changed the snow to sleet across Connecticut and Rhode Island and parts of southern Massachusetts. And that's going to continue to move up and bring sleet to the area, to the Boston area, especially between up through 6 o'clock this evening, and then eventually enough warm air will work up so that it'll change everything over to plain rain.
So change everything over to plain rain. So it sounds like by what, late evening, tomorrow morning, certainly there's not going to be much snow in the greater Boston area.
There could be some slush. I mean, temperatures will warm up some, but maybe not enough to get rid of all the snow. But certainly as we get after midnight, we're looking for rain, and yeah, that will turn anything that's on the ground over to a slushy type of surface.
So getting back to Mayor Walsh's quandary about school tomorrow, what's your best guess? Will the snow be gone, or you think parents should be planning on another on a snow day for their kids?
Well, tomorrow morning is going to be interesting. The storm will be mostly moving off to our north by that point. It could be a stray shower left over first thing in the morning during the morning commute. But what may be of more concern certainly during the morning is that any wet surfaces that are still around, temperatures are going to be dipping back to around freezing or even actually below freezing. So any of those wet surfaces could very easily freeze if they're not treated.
All right. So it sounds like some things to look out for tomorrow morning. That's Bill Babcock, meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Norton, Mass. Bill, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your time. Let's turn now to Radio Boston's Chris Siderick. He's been making his way northward toward his home near the New Hampshire border, and he joins us now from Assembly Square in Somerville. Chris, doesn't sound like you got very close to New Hampshire there.
Yeah, not exactly northward either. I left our BU studios around 2:30, and over an hour later, I made it a whopping 3 miles to the Assembly Square area here.
I see. So what have you seen?
Two words for you, Anthony. Slow and slick. Obviously, okay. Slow going. 3 miles in an hour, 50 minutes is not a great time. And it is definitely slick out here. I had four or five occasions where I could feel the back wheel sliding a little bit. I saw a couple of cars that basically slid off of Sturro at a couple of locations. And at one point on the Leverett connector, I actually heard this whirring sound that I thought must be a salt truck or a sand truck or something coming up behind me. Turns out it was a pretty decent-sized pickup truck whose back wheels were just spinning the whole way up the ramp. So Wow. It is slippery out here.
And what kind of response have you seen from the snow plows, our folks out there treating the roads? What are you seeing?
Well, I haven't seen a ton of plows, and I think part of that is that public officials are basically dealing with the same problem the rest of us commuters are dealing with, and that is the fact that it is hard to get anywhere right now, and that's kind of the difficulty in a storm that hits during rush hour like this. I do know that folks in Massachusetts and New Hampshire were grateful that they were able to get out and pre-treat the roads earlier. That should help in de-icing once the storm really starts to escalate, but in terms of what the conditions are right now, if you can avoid the roads, It is not great driving out here.
All right. Well, that's Radio Boston's Chris Siderick reporting from Assembly Square. On his way, we understand, to southern New Hampshire. Chris, safe travels out there. Drive carefully.
All right. Thanks, Anthony. You too.
All right. That's our show today. Radio Boston's a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Zoe Mitchell, and Eve Zukoff. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. Be careful out there. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.